Good morning and welcome to Sport and Life with Sam Kekovich and Leon Wigard. Sam, well, Tomo was sort of right but wrong too.
Well, yes, it's sort of an ambivalent occasion. I know what you're alluding to. We're talking about our T20 victory over New Zealand. And, of course, Geoff Thompson's forecasting was pretty well spot on to a large degree.
Well, he was a bit dirty on the fact that our fast bowling brigade were over there in what he called a substandard...
A Mickey Mouse competition.
Yeah, something like that.
As opposed to being on our shores here defending what's arguably regarded as the pinnacle of cricket, and that is the Ashes.
Oh, and playing Shield cricket to lead up to it.
Yeah. But all that aside, to see the Aussies come back from that demoralising defeat early doors against the Poms and to get themselves off the canvas was a monumental occasion. What a great final it was too.
Yes, and there's a lot of self-belief there now.
Well, apparently so. When you consider when they went into the competition, there was a lot of uncertainty, particularly pertaining to the tenure of Justin Langer as the head coach. There were some rumblings about David Warner, about his standing in the side, and not only about his form, but also some personalities, you know. But despite all that rocky road leading up to the final, you're right. Yeah, you're right. You know, it's a very, very smooth, happy camp.
How about Aaron Finch ringing Langer to say, don't worry about Warner, he'll be man of the Buddy series? And that was months ago.
That was months ago. He said, don't worry about that. He said, David Warner will be the man of the series. So Aaron Finch, and let me tell you, I know he never had his, statistically he wasn't a great contributor, but you can never understate his worth as a captain. He's a very, very astute leader. And more important, he's got a very soothing effect on a lot of those, you know, personalities.
Yes, yes.
It wouldn't be easy to, you know, keep an even keel on those personalities. There's some big-headed numbers in that side. But he seems to have a very soothing effect. And I noticed that even in the field, they treat him with a great degree of respect and he controls it, you know, with great aplomb.
Yeah, no-nonsense bloke.
He's a no-nonsense bloke. And I don't know Aaron Finch, but I know people that know him very well, and they all speak enormously highly of him. And he's not overstated, but when he speaks sense, and people listen.
Who was the cricketer that was called the Big Bird?
The Big Bird, that was Joel Garner.
So we got Aaron Finch, the little bird.
And Joel Garner's the Big Bird.
Big Bird.
Well, Joel Garner, they say, is a big bird. Well, you know, you could easily understand why. When you look at the man,
he's 7 foot.
So, but there's also an anatomical side of Joel Garner, which also could quite easily. Now, no, this is not a. This, we're not going to talk about biology
You're not going to mention the Sydney Harbour Bridge. The water's cold and deep.
Oh, yes, that was another good cryptic clue. I could elaborate upon that. No, but all in all, it's a great day for the Aussies, and that should augur well for when they come back to our shores and defend the Ashes against the Poms, who are. Well, I'm not so sure their confidence is sky high as it was after they handed us a walloping in the opening round of the T20. So I think they would have put them back in their box and on Delta alert.
Away from cricket now for the time, and our special guest today is Michael Schiavello, who is probably not overly well known in Australia, but
Name Schiavello is certainly.
Oh yeah, well,
interior decorating and
Schiavello, of course, Italian name. But there's a big building company. They did all the petitions and stuff. They're based here in Southbank.
They're based nearly all over the world.
Opposite casino.
They are. That's their office.
They started as little chippies, you know, like Max Beck.
They all do. Max Beck, yeah. The Pelicanos, all little start offers, chippies, concreters. They all got, here come Johnny Capello, here come Johnny Capello, and then the minute they're in the top BRW. I think they've got good accountants, I think. I'm not sure, but and they've got a great work ethic, Leon. So you better introduce our next.
They've got an unusual way of working too sometimes.
Oh, and what about when they say to the accountants, I think you better have another look at these numbers. I don't think I quite agree with you. And by the way, when you get into the sheets tonight, get in the bed, be careful where you put your feet. There might be
a horse's head. Michael Schiavello's brought out a book out called The Commentators, because he is a commentator. And Michael, you're working mainly in Asia these days.
I am, and what a thrill it is to be here next to a two-time Olympian.
Oh.
And a guy who's proven the bane of every sheep in Australia every Aussie summer, who I've been watching sell me lollipop lamb on TV for so many years, to finally sit here with you, Sam Kekovich. It's a great honour.
Well, you got yourself out of a bit of trouble there. I thought the initial opening.
I do want to say, though, you guys were talking about Joel Garner a moment ago, and I've got to quickly tell a story about Joel Garner. When I was 17 years old, working for a community radio station called Southern FM out of Moorabbin.
I listened to that
occasionally. Doing their Sunday morning sports show. I went to the Hilton Hotel and interviewed Richie Richardson, who was the West Indies captain back in 93.
Swashbuckler.
And I remember interviewing Richie in his room, and he was just... only thing he was wearing was a maroon pair of underpants. And as I'm sitting on his bed interviewing him with my little tape recorder, from the bathroom of the hotel, I hear a high-pitched falsetto voice singing a Caribbean song. I'm thinking, God, there's someone in the bathroom, some woman singing.
Maybe falsetto, that's like a tenor.
Yeah, it's like a high-pitched voice. And I'm like, okay, some woman, maybe it's Richie's wife or something in the bathroom singing. Lo and behold, a minute later... walks out this 7-foot giant, Joel Garner. He'd been singing in the bathroom in this high-pitched falsetto, and he also walks out just dressed in his underwear. And Richie goes, hey, Joel, quieting down. I'm trying to do an interview. And Joel's like, oh, sorry, Richie, and leaves the room. And that's the first time I met Joel Garner, and I was spellbound by how high-pitched his singing voice was and how tall he bloody is.
Well, how about the other thing that Sam was alluding to? Was that true as well about Joel Garner and his... Oh, didn't you get a good look?
We'll move on to the next question, I think. I kept my eyes above the waist.
So, Michael, the interesting thing about this book you brought out is you really talk about all the great broadcasters of sport around the world. Let's talk about you first. You're a Melbourne bloke?
I am Melbourne born and bred, old North Borwin boy. That's where I was, where I grew up.
North Boring,
as we used to call it also in high school. And Melbourne boy and bred, and then started travelling the world as a commentator in about 2001. I did my first show overseas in Japan when I was 25. And been commentating around the world ever since. Commentated now in 27 different countries, everywhere from the USA to England to France to Myanmar, Poland, Romania, Hungary, all around Asia. Done the Olympic Games, the Commonwealth Games, and these days work for a company called One Championship, which is mixed martial arts. So like you see in the UFC, the cage fighting. And we're broadcast to 154 countries. We Nielsen rate an average of 35 million viewers a show. We've peaked at 81 million viewers a show. And loving every moment of it.
Now, Michael, just from a mere layman's perspective, I could see that you're the leafy tree-lined suburb of North Borwin.
Yes.
So you come from a fairly affluent background. You're educated at Xavier, or St. Bede Xavier. So you're telling me, after being tutored by the Jesuits, I can see you've got a very sharp mind. So your priority in life has always been to become a commentator. There must have been something prior to that.
No, there was. This is an interesting story. You're spot on there, Sam.
What do you think I asked the question for?
You talk about affluent background, but it was more a case, to be honest. Dad was an immigrant factory worker. And he was a man who worked his fingers to the bone. Yes. And I remember him coming home every night. He was a shoemaker and a shoe factory in Preston, and his hands had turned black from all the chemicals and the leathers of making shoes, and worked very hard to put us through school. But in answer to your question, I always wanted to be an architect growing up. I loved drawing houses, designing houses. I always wanted to be an architect. And come year 10, of course, you write away to do work experience for a week. And I wrote away to all these architecture firms in Melbourne, and not one of them replied, not even with a no, just no one replied. 20 architecture firms, not even a no.
Well, how lucky are you when you consider the crap that's being produced around the world?
And I remember Sam crying to my mum saying, I don't know what's going on. No architecture firms have written back. And my mum, and you know, mums have a weird wisdom about them. They sort of know things. It's just in their gut. And my mum said to me, and this is in year 10, I was 15, she said, you've got a good voice. Why don't you do radio?
Is that what your mum said?
That's what she said.
Only your mother.
I don't have a good voice. I don't want to do radio. I want to be an architect. She goes, just try radio and just humour me. So mum wanted me to write away to 3AW because she listened to that. I'm like, forget that. I want to write away to Triple M, who had the D generation at the time. Jane Kennedy, Mick Molloy,
yes.
Rob Sitch, Tom Gleisner, Santo Chilaro. I wrote away to them, and I got a letter back a couple of weeks later, and I still have the letter. It is dated April 10, 1990, my birthday. inviting me in for a week's work experience at Triple M. I get to Triple M and a lady called Deanne Sloan, who's in charge of work experience, looks me up and down and says, what do you want to do in radio? And I'm thinking, I don't. I want to be an architect. I'm here to shut my mum up. She goes, I've got a good feeling about you. I'll stick you in the newsroom with our journalists. So she puts me in this little newsroom with a bloke who was reporting sport back then, some guy you might know called Eddie Maguire, another bloke called Steve Speziali, another bloke called Brian Johnson. And as soon as I entered that space, Sam and Leon, all thoughts of being an architect went from my mind, a light bulb switched on, and all I wanted to do was broadcast media. Changed my life.
What was the attraction?
I think it was, I grew up as a fat kid. I was a bullied fat wog, pretty much, okay? And I think that the attraction of media and broadcast media was that I could find a voice. And especially on radio, no one could see what I looked like. It turned out I did have a decent voice on radio, but no one could see that I was a fat wog. You know what I'm saying? So when I went back to Triple M and I begged them every holidays to go back for more work experience, and I started working on community radio at Southern FM and broadcasting various sports, I had a superpower. Mm. And the superpower was they couldn't see what I looked like, but
I had a good voice.
I had a good voice, and I could interview celebrities, and I could enter that world for a moment, and suddenly I became a cool kid amongst my peers at school, because in my school holidays and on the weekends, I was doing cool stuff like covering the VAFA, the amateur football, and getting press passes for the cricket at the MCG, and getting media passes for everything, and interviewing sports stars, and that was the appeal for me. And it still appeals to me, that immediacy of broadcast media.
Now that you mention about this being bullied, like those are the days when we were called wogs. I remember going to school, so I probably had a similar landscape to your good self. And there was no great emphasis placed on racism or being bullied. You had to deal with it yourself. I was pretty handy with my mitts, so.
And I wasn't. I wasn't a violent person. I wasn't
I wasn't a violent person, but every now and again, you know, you get pushed to the corner, you've got to sort of shape up.
The one thing I had, Sam, was a loud voice. And even now with my sons, because especially my oldest son, who is 7 years old, and he's like me when I was young. He's not a big boy. He's rather skinny, though. But he's not inclined to punch someone. And I said, his name's Dominic. And I said, Dominic, if someone bullies you, the first thing to do, you've got a loud voice like daddy, use your voice.
Yeah.
You know, and that was the only thing I had against the bullies back then.
No, but the point, in all due respects, your son's in contemporary times.
Right.
You know, the mood and the you know.
It was different back then, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I'm saying the expectations and the emphasis on the matters you're alluding to has changed dramatically. And also public opinion on all those issues.
Even just the way they say it. Like now, if you're a fat kid at school getting bullied, it's called fat shaming.
Yeah.
Back in our day, it was just flat out bullying.
Yeah, exactly.
You were just an idiot who was bullying another kid because you wanted to pick on him. So
difficult circumstance, and it's good that you've got through that break. Yeah. And you had a vehicle at your disposal which gave you the added confidence to move on.
Exactly.
And you've turned out a superstar.
Thank you.
Great.
The confidence is the big thing. And I still say that now. When people come to me wanting to be sports commentators and saying, what do I need to be a commentator? What does it take? Do I need a good voice? Do I need knowledge of the sport? Do I need to be a sports nut? I'm like, no, you don't. There's two things you really need, and one breeds the other. First of all, you need passion, enthusiasm. That's number one. And that passion and enthusiasm breeds confidence. They go hand in hand. If you have those two things, you can make it.
Yep.
Can we get on to sport?
I think it's time, Leon. I want to clarify the background, because that's important, so we understand our subject matter. See, particularly when you talk about, you know, sensitive areas like you alluded to then, when you have to deal with them in its early days, there's a number of the Michael Scavellos that fell through the cracks.
Yeah.
Oh,
he's not the only one that came through.
Most of them.
Held his ground. Most of them did fall through the cracks.
And it's sad, Sam, and you bring up a really good point there, that there's a lot of people that had similar aspirations that I did that never managed to climb out of that pit of being the bullied kid. So they never aspired to anything higher.
I saw them, mate, in my school. I saw them in, the ones that couldn't hold their ground sometimes. They didn't have a shoulder to lean on or whatever, they would walk away. They'd walk away. They wouldn't confront it because they were bullied, and it's a terrible, sad state of affairs. And even when we played, say, footy for an argument's sake, there's a lot of biffo was accepted. You know, and if you couldn't cop it, well,
Yeah.
You drifted off in the sunset, packed your caravan up and drifted off into the sunset.
The old saying, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen, right? And a lot of people got out of the kitchen.
They did. Leon, why don't we move on to a bit of sport now?
Well, just to finalise that point or bring it to conclusion, because I think we're sort of floating off into the blue there. You just don't get onto a career like that without a bit of hard work, a bit of slog, a little bit of whatever it takes.
Research, yeah.
A lucky break here or a smart opportunistic thing to do. So how did you get involved with the international part of broadcasting?
You know, I worked my fingers to the bone and by the time I was 21, I was already commentating for Fox Sports here in Australia. So I'm pretty sure that I'm still maybe the youngest commentator ever on Australian TV, 20 or 21 I was. And it's just when Fox Sports, Foxtel came to Australia, yep. I think it was 96. They might have been the premier sports network back then before they became Fox Sports. But then in 2001, I was 25 years old. The biggest fight event in the world at the time was based out of Japan. It was called K1. It was a kickboxing event that brought all the best fighters together and had shows in the Tokyo Dome where they put 85,000 people in the Tokyo Dome to watch these fights. And I got asked by a guy from New Zealand to commentate one of these shows because their commentator, Neil Walker, who New Zealand fans will be familiar with off TVNZ, was sick. And they called me on 3 days' notice and said, can you hop on a plane to Japan tomorrow, venture over to Fukuoka and commentate one of these K1 shows in front of 20,000 people for a global English feed? And I always say to people, no matter what opportunity is offered you in commentary or in media, always say yes. And even if you think you can't do it, say yes and then go away and study like hell and learn how to do it. And that's what I did. And I went over there and knocked it out of the park and I became a global commentator ever since then.
Now, the concept of the book, where you've listed a whole lot of fellow broadcasters, and what do you propose? What was your proposal to talk about with those people? Was it their background? Was it their style? How have you approached that?
Criteria, yeah.
The book has a lot of expert contributors in it. Great Aussie commentators like Gordon Bray, the great rugby commentator, Andy Raymond, a lot of American commentators, Tim Neverett, who was the commentator of the 2020 World Series winners, the LA Dodgers. Of course, Vin Scully, the greatest commentator of all time. Kathy Rigby, an Olympian, who I think was in the same Olympics you were in. She was a gymnast, Kathy Rigby. And the thing was that I approached them all with their thoughts about commentary and what makes good commentary and examples of good commentary. But the concept for the book came about in that in doing research on a book on commentary, I discovered that this year, 2021, is the 100th anniversary of the profession of sports commentary. The first ever live sports commentary on radio happened on April 11, 1921, when a bloke called Florent Gibson, who was a newspaper journalist for the Pittsburgh Post, commentated live ringside a boxing featherweight match in Pittsburgh between Johnny Ray and Johnny Dundee. And he did it over a telephone that was done to a very small radio audience on KDKA radio. And I thought, wow, what better time to release a book on commentary than the 100th year anniversary celebrating what has been the soundtrack of our lives.
Now, you've missed out on your favourite commentator who goes back prior to these guys, I think.
Howard Cosell.
Oh, Howard. There's a whole chapter on Howard in the book. My favourite Howard commentary, strangely enough, was not
Muhammad Ali.
Everyone says down goes Frazier, and I didn't think that was one of his best commentaries at all. I actually think it wasn't really a sports commentary, but it was. It's when he announced live on air, broke the news that John Lennon had been murdered, had been shot. And what happened was he was commentating Monday Night Football with Frank Gifford. It was a Miami match, and they were about 4 seconds away from the end of the game when word came to them via NBC's execs or ABC's execs that John Lennon had just died. And it was a scoop. And Howard Cosell was very much in two minds whether he wanted to announce it or leave it for the news team to announce. Anyway, with some encouragement from Frank Gifford, he decided with 4 seconds to go in the match to announce that John Lennon, who he knew, he was good friends with, he'd interviewed John Lennon, had passed away. And I thought that was the most special moment in Howard's illustrious career. And I loved Howard Cosell. A lot of people didn't like him. You either loved him or you hated Howard. And I thought he was brilliant. And he reminded me very much of another commentator, a late commentator, an Aussie, who I also loved, who also was a former lawyer, George Gulusic.
George Gulusic.
Yeah, love
West Australia.
Yeah, yeah, love George.
A good friend of George's, yeah.
Remind me a lot of George, Sam. Yeah. Your voice, your nature strong, reminds me a lot of George. Strong, big bloke. And George's commentary, especially of Ben Johnson at the 1988 Seoul Olympics, I thought he was tremendous, George.
ABC, wasn't he?
He was the ABC for a long, long time.
And you pronounced it a different way, do you?
Gulusic or Gulusic? I've heard both.
Well, Gulusic is the anglicised version.
Right.
Yeah.
But I love Big George.
Well, he passed away, didn't he, George?
Yeah, he did. About 5 years ago, I think it was.
Yeah.
He was mad in the racing. He had a lot of horses.
I managed to sit next to him for a couple of weeks when him and Benny Pike were calling the Commonwealth Games boxing on 3AW. Yeah. And spending time with George, what a human piece of thunder he was. Amazing.
Yeah. And there was a... Remember the great movie, The River Plate, Battle of the River Plate?
Yeah, the Battle of the
and
River
Plate. And they had a sports commentator that was announcing that. I don't know if it was a made-up person or... I think he was a realistic... sports broadcaster that was commentating on the radio of what was happening with River Plate and that big battleship. Do you remember who that might have been?
I do not. It was Battle of the River Plate was the movie? Yeah, so it wasn't about sports, it was about war.
And the River Plate's in South America. Yeah. And it went in there for say the Germans went in there it was a safe harbour for them. And so the British had the blocked off. And anyway, it was an interesting film. Anyway, it doesn't matter. And of course, the other one was Ronald Reagan, who was a sports broadcaster. Mm.
Ronald Reagan was a baseball broadcaster, of course, originally from Iowa. And these were back in the days when baseball broadcasting and cricket broadcasting was fake. Of course, Alan McGilvray days when they telegram the information in from Lords and you know come over the telegrams and they'd hand them a little code that they had to translate as what was happening over there. And Alan McGilvray, Ronald Reagan, Nat Albright also for baseball would then make up the play in their mind to communicate to the radio listeners.
Michael, tell me, the power of sport in your view, does that lie in the voice of commentary?
I think it lies in both the voice of commentary and the moment itself. And I think what commentary does is it adds to your memory what we call starburst memories. So we always remember where we were when something important happened.
Yeah, sure.
People of your generation remember where you were when JFK got assassinated.
Elvis Presley died. You know,
I remember where I was when I heard Princess Diana had died.
Yeah, we all did.
You know, I remember exactly where I was. And I think with sports, it's the same thing. When you see or hear a sports moment and you accompany, you have a commentator's voice accompanying that moment, it stays burned into your mind. It's one of the great beauties of sport.
Okay, if it's firmly ensconced in your mind, the broader question I want to ask is, do you think it's possible, the voice of commentary, to attract an audience that under normal circumstances wouldn't be attracted to the sport?
100%. I think if you get a good commentator, a great commentator like Murray Walker, Walker attracted
people to F1
that never would have watched. If you get someone like Sid Waddell in darts, I mean, Sid Waddell attracted so many people to darts that who would ever watch bloody darts? It was a pub sport.
In cycling.
Right.
Ron
Phil
Casey.
Phil Liggett in cycling.
Ron Casey in velodrome.
It's a velodrome. Right.
And Phil Liggett
in the Tour de France.
Exactly. And they're all in the book. And think again of someone like Billy Birmingham, the 12th man. And
very
what his wide world of sports and 12th man, tapes and cassettes and CDs, etc., did for commentary. How many people started watching wide world of sports and listening and watching cricket thanks to Billy Birmingham parodying Richie Beno and Bill Laurie and those guys?
Billy Birmingham was so nervous about performing live. He spoke at Bang Sang many years ago. We almost had to push him onto the stage. And then he developed that aspect of his show business life to be a very good performer at live.
Oh, he's a genius. Billy's an absolute genius. Yep. Fantastic writer. Yep. Fantastic comedian. Yep. Yep.
See, Ray Warren's a good friend of ours too at Bang Sang. Another great commentator. But whilst we're all very accomplished, we got great voices and accomplished commentators, has there ever been a moment in time when you thought, geez, perhaps There's a couple of gaffes here. Perhaps I might have to look for an alternate vocation.
A couple of slaps over the wrist, because I've got a little bit of a risque style of commentary where I use a lot of one-liners and things like that. So I think once back in the old Fox Sports days, it was a boxing match I was commentating and a guy was getting beaten up and I said he's worn more leather than the Nazis. And I got a little call from my producer saying, clever line, but let's maybe not mention Nazis on live television. You know, so a few little raps over the wrist now and then over the knuckles, but nothing too serious.
See, I've got a very... that was a fact, wasn't it? The Nazis were around.
They wore a lot of leather.
So why wouldn't you talk about it? Yeah, well, people are so sensitive, so... a lot of this is sort of nowadays with the woke stuff. They've banned everything.
Month ago, I was commentating a fight between a Chinese guy and another guy over in Singapore, and it's a mixed martial arts fight. So you can go to the ground and get on someone's back and you flatten them out. It's called flatten them out. And I said, the Chinese guy, whatever his name was, he's been flattened out like a Chinese pancake. And the Chinese took some offense to that. Yeah. And I'm like, what's offensive? Where pancake is flat. I don't understand how I offended anyone, but apparently I offended some Chinese people.
They can read into it.
As I always say to people, take a deep breath. A level of irreverence is part of our DNA, and it's never in the content, it's in the tone in which it's delivered.
It is. And if it's in a fun, good, jovial tone,
it's relevant to what you're alluding to.
Exactly. But unfortunately, Sam, we're living in something called cancel culture. So today on TV, on radio, you have to be so careful and often second guess what you're going to say before you say it, because that cancel culture is out there and it's loud, and I think it's terrible, but it is what it is.
Tell me who owns One Championship.
One Championship is owned by a man called Chatri Sichutong. He's a half Thai, half Japanese entrepreneur who used to run a hedge fund business on Wall Street and is a Harvard MBA. A very amazing story of his own, but a martial artist at heart. And he got out of Wall Street, didn't like the financial world, went back to living in Singapore and opened a big gym over there, a martial arts gym, and developed One Championship. And now he's turned it into the largest fight organization in the world.
Amazing. 4 billion people listen to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, as I said, broadcast to 154 countries, 6.4 billion digital views a year. Nielsen rated. It's crazy how big it is.
Who are the bad commentators? Who don't you like, honestly?
Honestly? Who don't I like?
Well, you can't listen to. You have an anathema to them. Just turn the station over.
Eddie Maguire? I was never a big fan. I like Eddie as a person. You know, worked with him at Triple M back
in
the day.
Don't be patronising. Okay, but
I never appreciated him as a commentator, to be honest with you. I never did.
Anyone else?
Let me think. I disliked a couple of soccer commentators. John Motson. I was never a huge fan of John Motson, to be honest with you. In Australia, you know, I know a lot of people go nuts for Anthony Hudson. Never appealed to me much. You asked me to be honest.
No, I agree with you.
A lot of people rave about Anthony Hudson. Never appealed to me that much.
When I say I agree your forthright manner.
Yeah.
That's what we do on this show.
Just not... Look, everyone's got different cup of tea.
Everyone's got... Exactly
and
right.
They're not my cup of tea, you know.
Where'd you get that question from?
That's a good question.
Well, I think it's relevant. You know, you got to balance it out. Why don't, you know, we're not here to just, you know, pander me to everyone. You know, you'd like to hear the alternative view. There's a lot of people out there. I always ask people, you know, you look at the media. In the media, they do a survey sometimes. Who are your favourite commentators?
Yep.
And, you know, I look at them very closely. And what the general consensus is may be vastly different to what I feel like or other people. So it's not that I'm putting you on the spot.
No,
it's
a good question. And like I said, everyone's got their different personal tastes. For every person that doesn't like an Anthony Hudson or an Eddie Maguire, there's probably 10 people that love them. And it all depends what your ears enjoy listening to.
Well, now, Michael Schiavello, you travel all over Asia these days. You're a married man with a couple of kids, living in a suitcase or out of a suitcase. Yeah. How do you manage that?
You know, my wife has never known any differently. We met in 2009. At the time, I was traveling back and forth to the USA every 11 days, 10 days, before we relocated to the US in 2011. We lived there in Las Vegas for 7 years. And then every weekend, again, I was traveling around America doing shows. So she's never known any different. The kids have never known any different. It's just what dad does. And it's been difficult over the last 18 months with the pandemic. I've done 16 weeks of hotel quarantine since October 2020. Mm. So 4 months of my life have been spent in a hotel room, locked inside. I must have done in excess of 50 or 60 COVID tests around the world, and all the logistics and legalities that go with traveling during COVID, going back and forth. Mm. And it's been a hard slog, but you've got to do what you've got to do.
Probably helped the marriage survive as well.
You know what? It's good to get away from each other now and again. some breathing room.
The book is called The Commentators, 100 Years of Sports Commentary.
Yeah.
And your favourite part of the book? One you're most pleased with.
I really enjoyed that chapter on Howard Cosell I mentioned before, but my favourite part of the book, I think, was writing about Vin Scully. Vin Scully is recognised by the American Sportscasters Association as the greatest announcer of all time. For 67 years, he was the commentator of the LA Dodgers. And to me, he is the best commentator ever, and he is the only example of perfect commentary I've ever heard. He commentated Sandy Koufax's perfect game in 1965. And his commentary of that final innings goes for 8 minutes 45 seconds. It's 1,064 words of the most exquisite, beautiful, flawless commentary you'll ever hear. It's on YouTube. I suggest that people download it, have a listen to it. This guy's the reason they named Mulder and Scully and Mulder off X-Files, while Scully is named Scully.
Scully, yeah.
And he's also a recipient of a Presidential Medal of Freedom, the highest honor for an American citizen, from President Obama. He's got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Dodger Stadium is located at 1000 Vin Scully Avenue. And I'm proud to say, at 94 years old, he's a contributor to the book. So it's a huge thrill for me to have him in there. And the chapter on him, I think, is my favorite.
And Wilkinson Publications, your association with them?
Yeah, they're fantastic. You know, working with Michael Wilkinson and Jess Lomas and the whole team, Sue Ann, the whole team there at Wilkinson Publishing. And I've got a lot more books I want to do through them in the future that are cooking up in the old mind as I travel around and have time to write. And I'm thrilled they got behind this idea and that, you know, the book has taken off. Last week, guys, we hit number one on the Amazon best-selling list.
Yeah, it's a pretty narrow list, but anyhow.
Thanks, Sam.
Now, just a quick one, Mike, as we approach Christmas.
Yes.
What a beautiful gift it would be for anybody. Now, where can they get this gift? And more importantly, what sort of a stipend?
You know what? I think the book retails for $27.95. You can get it directly from wilkinsonpublishing.com.au, from Amazon, Booktopia, Dimmix, QBD, Book. Depository, anywhere good books are sold. Everyone's got it on sale.
Hard copy, soft copy?
Soft copy, 320 pages, over 60 sports events in there.
Pictorials?
There are no pictorials in the book, but I'm sure that everyone will really enjoy it. If you're a sports nut or you know anyone that is, this really is the ultimate.
Well, Leon, I haven't got any gifts, any bucket list, but if you're seeing fit to purchase one this year.
I'm pretty sure Santa is stocking them in the North Pole, so when you write your letter, make sure you put it on there.
I'll do a deal with you. Now, our great sponsor here is Mitchelton Wines, some of the great wines of the world. I don't know if you've sampled any of them.
I have.
They're fantastic. Beautiful. Yeah, a mutual friend of ours.
From the Gambie.
Nice. Mitchelton Wines. Now, I keep my word, and I'm not for one moment suggesting you wouldn't. But if I was to give you a bottle of wine, which is far more expensive than that paltry $27.95 for that piece of work that you produced without any pictorials, I'll exchange it for Christmas for one of your books.
You have a deal, sir.
Why?
You have a deal because
I have a deal. I thought you said I'm a deal.
No, you have a
speak. You're a commentator.
They're not mutually exclusive.
You have a deal, sir.
I can't exclude Leon for this deal. We need two books.
Do they do it? Oh, well, do they do a good bottle of Shiraz?
Shiraz.
Hit me up with a Shiraz. And you've got yourself two books,
mate. We're chicken here by this time, normally.
Our guest has been Michael Schiavello. The book is The Commentators. You can't miss it. It's by Wilkinson Publishing. And Michael, lovely to have you in the studio, and thanks for being with us.
Leon, Sam, it's an absolute thrill, guys. Thank you so much, and I'll be back in soon, dropping off those couple of books.
Now, for the benefit of all the punters out there, Leon, we always say this, it's $27.95 short term, but if you can hang in after Christmas, have those sales, it'll be, I guarantee you, at $3.95 at any market. Au revoir.
We look forward to your company next week.